Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 191 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today her body clock. Yeah, whip out those watches. We're going to be talking. We have a terrific show. And before we begin, just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And you know, I'm a master swimmer, and Smarty Pants Vitamins is one of our biggest sponsors. Yay, Smarty Pants. And here's your reminder to click onto iTunes after this episode and rate and review the show. We have a superb and awesome expert on with us. I want to hear your feedback. This is going to be an awesome show. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life.
It's all about her.
Oh, you've been reading about it everywhere, haven't you? The whole thing about the body clock, when to eat. All of a sudden, it's all about the when factor. It's everywhere, no matter where you go. Magazines, it's on podcasts, science is getting thrown all over the place. How about we talk to a number one expert in the field who can really share some wisdom, some sage wisdom, all about what this is about, how this really impacts on your health and life. He's written What to Eat When, a strategic plan to improve your health and life through food. His name is Dr. Michael Roiz, and I bet you've heard about him because he's the chief wellness officer at the Cleveland Clinic, chief medical consultant on the Dr. Oz show, author of not one but four number one New York Times best-selling books, and originator of the very popular realage.com website. Mike, welcome to the Her podcast.
It's great to be on Her, so thank you very much. It's a privilege.
Well, I was just whizzing right through your book, loving every single moment of it. I want to hop right to it. Why did you write this book? Why now?
Well, what happened is that data on circadian rhythms and circadian rhythms changing your food clock has been done in animals for about 7 to 10 years. But I don't write anything until we've got at least four studies in humans with a preponderance of data coming out the same way. And so over the last 2.5 years, the data in humans came out. I can tell you my favorite study that really motivated me to do this. But what happened is the data, we were always taught in medical school, a calorie is a calorie is a calorie. And it is in the test tube. But in your body, a calorie in the morning is like 9/10 of a calorie, and a calorie after 7 p.m. is like 1.1 calories. So you can really hack your system, hack your metabolism to maximize your health and weight loss by eating earlier in the day and less later.
Huh. Well, you know, all right, this is America. Damn it, and that's not American. If you've what you've said, you know, in the past and what's been written about the book, if you want to lose weight and maximize your health, begin by eating in tune with your circadian rhythm and forget about societal norms about what foods belong with what time of day. Whoa, blasphemy to the food industry and to what is classically taught. I mean, is this huge and revolutionary?
Well, the reason it's so huge is because it does break the societal norm, one. And two, it's revolutionary because when you start to do this, I was a cynic in it. So we were all cynics when we had the idea of doing this. So we tried it, and it's actually remarkable. There's three surprises for all the groups and patients we've had doing it. It's not everyone gets it, but most people do. when you stop being hungry at night, so you stop late night snacking. Two is you feel much more energy during the daytime. And three, you sleep much better. So I think the thing that surprised me 4 days after I started this, all of a sudden, I had the energy of someone who was 20 years younger. I felt like my 20-year younger self. Sometimes, and so you say, wow, why didn't I do this before? And obviously, it's out of the norms is in America, as opposed to some of the other countries in the world, we eat our biggest meal at dinner because we have most time. But in fact, you can cook dinner, but then eat it for breakfast, which is another societal norm you're breaking. But it really changes how you feel, how you eat. So I now eat 75% of my calories before 2 p.m. I'll tell you why that number when we talk a little more. But in fact, by doing that, it just the amazing thing is how much better you sleep, and two, how much more energy you feel.
That's amazing. So, you just opened up the topic here about, you know, the number of hours. I just want to throw this out to clarify, because I'm sure most of my listeners are like, "Say what?" And so, how many hours do you actually eat in? What's your eating window during the day?
So the data would say that you eat when the sun is out or when it's intended to be out. That is, and pick a middle America, so it's like Chicago, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. would be fine. I actually eat my breakfast around 10 a.m., so I eat in the window of 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and at 15 hours. So by doing it that way, you end up with getting the benefits of intermittent fasting on health, the benefits on keto, on weight loss, without having to do anything weird with your food.
Aha. Uh-huh. So a lot of people are sort of sitting back saying, okay, I'm beyond confused, right? So there's an intermittent fasting topic that's just kicking around the internet like there's no tomorrow, with everybody and his brother and sister weighing in on this, most of them not experts in the field. Then you have time-restricted feeding, and then you have keto. All right. Help us work through that a little bit so that we can get back to the whole when factor here, because I think that what's happened out there, and I think you can agree with me, that there's just been mass misunderstanding and confusion.
So this started, that is the intermittent fasting, really started with the data from about 30 years ago that if you reduce the calories by about 15%. And the Biosphere in Arizona in the 80s was the real prototype project for this. If you reduce your calories 15 to 30% compared to what would maintain normal weight, you actually live about 30%, maybe even 50% longer in 21 of 23 animal species. So it's been done a lot. It's in 23 animal species. Two species don't, but the other 21 do live longer and live healthier, other than the fact that they're stressed by the lack of food, at least initially. And even so, and we in America can't do this. It was tried in the Biosphere project. They abandoned it because people were getting in fights. You're eating 6 peas, I only got 5 peas, et cetera. So they actually abandoned the Biosphere project. There's some people still trying it. But this led to the concept, what happens if we do it only 2 days a week, intermittent fasting? So eat normal 5 days, don't eat 2 days a week. And in Walter Longo's studies, even better, you fast or decrease your calories. And it's not a total fast, so you go 1,000 calories the first day, 750 for the next four, once a month. And what happened is not in animals, not only did they live longer, but they even live longer than that because they regenerate their stem cells, their pluripotent stem cells. And that's a key for repair and quality of life. if you suffer injuries, and I can come back to that. But in any case, this the intermittent fasting or time-restricted eating appears to work to lengthen life in animals. It's now the data in humans has accumulated that show it works in humans, at least with the markers of aging and disability. We don't have humans doing this. It's only been around literally 3 years, and there are 5 studies in humans showing the benefit of that. At the same time, there's ketosis. So whether you do time-restricted feeding or intermittent fasting, what it means is you're eating a reduced calorie, a set of calories, for a period of time, whether it's 2 days every week or 5 days a month, and the biomarkers of aging and of chronic disease development are reduced, your stem cell telomeres get longer, which helps means you can repair things longer.
What about people who are thinking about doing keto 24/7? Their thought is, well, if keto's that good, let's just live it.
Well, that's not keto. They develop ketosis in the periods of the intermittent fasting, but it's not keto round the clock. Keto started in the, actually it was, believe it or not, in the 1850s for a few forms of epilepsy. It worked in a very few, less than 1% of pediatric epilepsy is responsive, a specific type, and was really brought about by a guy named Mark Batchow in the 73-5 period at Hopkins. And so for those small number of pediatric epilepsy that fit in this, that's worked. And so we know it's relatively safe when done with, if you will, the ability to monitor and to take some of extra vitamins, maybe even Smarty Pants vitamins. But in any case, the point that I'm bringing up is that we know how to manage that in a healthy way. On the other hand, ketosis for the general population, we know it works for weight loss, but most people can't stay on no carbs for very long, meaning they crave something in their body is saying, I need some carbs to function well. And that's probably true to function optimally. We don't know enough about it. It hasn't been around for long enough periods of time, meaning in large segments of the population, to know whether people without that rare form of pediatric epilepsy, where they will seize if they don't do it, have enough motivation to be able to overcome the cravings. At least most studies say not for the general population, but we don't know that truthfully yet.
So, interesting.
But you do get a weight loss with it. So the question is, how do you get the benefits of both? And it's by being ketotic for a few hours every day seems to give you the weight loss benefit. And you get that with having a time window greater than 12 hours, especially if you do a little exercise. And certainly you have it if you go to 14 or 15 hours.
Huh. So of all of this, in your book, What to Eat When, are you suggesting that there's maybe one form of eating better than others in terms of the when factor? You're talking, you know, about the way you live and what sounds to me to be time-restricted feeding. Are you using
That's
that
correct.
Interchangeably?
Time-restricted feeding seems to give you the benefit of intermittent fasting, at least with all the biomarkers, gives you the benefits of ketosis without doing crazy things that hurt your health, like eating a couple pounds of bacon that change your microbiome. So what we're, as you can see by the references in the book, I am a science nerd. Mike Krupain, who's the co-author and was the head of food for Consumer Reports and Consumer Union, is now the medical chief of staff of the Dr. Oz Show, also is a science nerd. So this is the data. We wouldn't have written this if the data weren't strong enough, as well as if we hadn't tried it in my patients and in groups we have had on the Oz Show. And it works. And as I said, what you do is when you do it all of a sudden you're not hungry at night and you feel an enormous amount of energy and you sleep better. And so we're not saying there's any one type of food to eat. We're telling you that if you do this, and you don't have to do it every day, you know, the sun comes up every day, as long as you eat with the sun. And if you mess up one day, well, the sun's coming up the next day, go back to it. But it appears that if you even do it 5 out of 7 days, you get an enormous benefit to health.
All right. So now we've got a lot of people listening who are in a panic, because what they do is, because of their work, they're nurses, maybe ER physicians, people who basically have to deal with night shifts, firemen, police, et cetera. What happens to them? Can this also help them?
Well, you know, that chapter we took out of the book, we took about 20 out, because although we had a couple data elements in humans, a couple studies from humans, we didn't have four. But so let me go and tell you what we think happens and tell you we're actually doing, as you know, I'm the chief wellness officer at Cleveland Clinic, as you said. So we're doing this at the Cleveland Clinic in a randomized controlled study to see if this works. But what, as you know, people who work shift, and especially who work on the third shift, have an increased incidence of obesity, of heart disease, of cancer, of dying early, of having disability, not a little bit early, it's about a 9-year difference, having an increased incidence of stroke and an increased incidence of dementia. All of the bad things, and they get it early. And so we're saying, what can we do to help them? Well, it turns out that if you eat 75% of your calories, and complete that 8 hours before you're going to go to bed, and then not eat for the 3 hours before you go to bed, it appears that does the same thing even if you're on a shift, meaning you get the benefits of intermittent fasting, you get the benefits of time-restricted eating, which you're doing, and you get the weight loss benefits of ketosis, and you don't develop chronic disease. So that's been done in a couple animal species, in animal experiments where you can shift time pretty easily, and in two human studies as well, and I can get into those. I should tell you, before we get to that, that my favorite study on humans of all is one in Spain where they took people who wanted to lose weight, and they had them, in Spain the biggest meal is at midday, so they had them eat it before 2 p.m. or after 3 p.m. The group that had the same number of calories, the group that ate it before 2 p.m. lost 25% more pounds than the group after 3 p.m. So, and same number of calories, as I said, so that 25% is a pretty damn big number. So the point is that you can really hack your metabolism by eating, finishing 75% of your calories 8 hours before you go to bed. When we've looked at the data, and the data in humans, there's one small study in shift workers, and there's this study, what I would call crazy study, just because it's pretty impossible to get people to do this. But at the Brigham and Women's, they put people in a blinded room, meaning no windows, and the lights they controlled, the food they controlled, and they could watch TV, but it was Netflix, and they had no time cues. They took away the time cues. They had no idea what time it was. And then they shifted the light patterns to shift all around the day. And they found that, again, the point is that our metabolism is much higher early in our awake period than later in the awake period. And they did that for 20 weeks, I mean, if you will. So I wouldn't have volunteered for that study. But in any case, those are the only data points we have. So we're trying to see this in real life people in two situations. One is when you fly from one city to another and go 7 time zones to see what happens. And the other is a randomized study of third shift workers here at the Cleveland Clinic.
All right. Now I got an interesting question. And that is, some people are trying to figure out which, you know, if they're looking at the number of hours of a day, what if they move things around just a little bit, and instead of having the 75% prior to 2 p.m., they decided to blow off breakfast and be able to finish up a nice dinner. You know, I mean, just let's just say their mid whatever it is, mid-afternoon or early afternoon meal is their biggest one, but they're going to eat a little later because they have a family, they have other things going on in their life. Oftentimes it's like a family situation. So they've opted to blow off breakfast, eat later, and keep that same time period, but move it down. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, it works from a standpoint of intermittent fasting and developing ketosis in the later period, as long as they're eating in that time-restricted window. What doesn't work is they have to cut down their calories by about 20%. Because if you eat, as I said, a calorie in the morning is like 9/10 of a calorie. A calorie in the evening is about 1.1 calorie. It's between 15 and 25% difference. So let's say on average it's 20% different, which means you have to reduce your calories by 20% if you're eating 75% literally of your calories, as most of us Americans do, later in the day. It's probably, you don't want to say that's responsible for a lot of the weight gain, but it probably is responsible for a considerable amount of the pound and a quarter the average American gains per year.
So what you're saying then is if you're electing, as many people do, to blow off breakfast and instead start commencing your eating later on, again, because maybe you have a family, you have you know, some need to be able to have more of an evening meal, not a late evening meal, but let's just say you're finishing it no later than 7:30. You're saying that if you're going to have that kind of a pattern, you want to cut your total calories by 25%. Is that correct?
Yeah, to maintain the same weight as the person who did that same food amount, but eats it in the morning, you would have to cut your calories by 20% to keep the same weight.
Okay, roughly 20% then. And say that one more time. I think our eyebrows went up when you gave us the difference between a calorie eaten during the day and a calorie eaten later on.
A calorie in the morning is like 9/10 of a calorie, and a calorie in the evening, as after 7 p.m., is about 1.1 calorie. It's between in the studies it averages an 18% difference, but it's between a 15 and 20% difference.
Gotcha.
And it's because we become insulin. It's our circadian rhythm, that clock we have, clock we have in our brains, 20,000 neurons out of whatever it is, a trillion neurons in our brain. But out of the, or 400 billion in our brain, out of all the cells in our brain, there are 20,000 that serve as our, if you will, our third eye or our circadian clock that responds to the sun. And the way we sleep is because it releases different hormones. Melatonin is one of them that everyone knows the name of, that, and it's not important to know the names, but that's what changes our sleep-wake pattern. What changes here is that we become insulin resistant during the day. That is, in the morning, insulin serves as a great mailman. Insulin takes sugar from your bloodstream and puts it into your cells. Think of your cells as a mailbox. So the mailbox door is open. The mailman can do the job really easily. By the time the evening rolls around, that insulin mailman has a tough time because the mailbox door is shut and he has to go through a lot of things to get it open. That takes extra time and extra work. And that means that you leave some blood sugar in the blood rather than putting in the cells. That does two bad things. One, it accumulates in the blood and then it turns into triglycerides, which you store as fat. And that causes inflammation in your body and your brain. And the second thing is that sugar attaches to other proteins in the blood, such as hemoglobin, and that hemoglobin becomes hemoglobin A1C. Well, what that does is that hemoglobin, whose job is to release oxygen to your tissues, is dysfunctional. It doesn't release oxygen as well. That's why diabetics who have high A1C levels get ulcers and get kidney disease and even dementia because they can't release oxygen normally. Well, it also attaches to other proteins, like the grout protein between the cells lining your arteries. And when that happens and blood pressure comes down, it causes little tears or rents in the arteries in that grout area, and you plaster it over with LDL cholesterol. And that's the genesis of atherosclerosis. So the two things that are really bad for us, inflammation caused by belly fat and dysfunctional proteins caused by blood sugar, are both caused by eating too much at night and not enough in the morning.
Boy, you know, I'm just sitting here and I'm saying to myself, what a mess we have out there, Michael. Just everything you're saying, obviously, is science-based, credible, amazing, compelling research. And then you look at what's going on a typical, you know, American day, and it's exactly the opposite. People are just blown, you know, right and left. They're not getting enough sleep. They're eating whatever's within 100 feet of them. They're just doing this now basically 24/7. There's no honoring or respecting or even acknowledging that there is a circadian rhythm. Not, you know, obviously this is sort of new news to so many people out there. And this is a major wake-up call. This is why I want everyone out there to run out and get this book. It's a bestseller, What to Eat When, A Strategic Plan to Improve Your Health and Life Through Food. And if you want to learn more about the book, just go to wenwei.com, where you'll learn a lot more about the science and obviously about Dr. Roizen's excellent work. Mike, when's that Cleveland Clinic human study coming out on the night shift workers? I know a whole lot of people out there who'd love to hear about this.
Oh, we've just started it. So, you know, it's probably 2.5 to 3 years away from a publication, because you've got to go through it and then analyze the data. And then 6 months after that before you can publish it. So it's a ways away.
Well, You know what comforts me is just knowing that it's being done, because as you're well aware, you know, we've got a lot of animal data, but human data is priceless, and, you know, it's really difficult to do. And it's just wonderful to know that you're commandeering this over there. The other thing I want everyone to know out there is in the book itself, what I love about the way this was laid out was, you know, you get a really great foundation in the science, how food works, you know, what this whole issue of when is all about. Why is the when factor so important? How many of you have just obsessed about the how much and the quality, but we never really thought about that whole issue of timing? Now we do, because science is very exciting, and we have a new research path that's really been pointing the way toward integrating that when factor in there. And then really looking at conditions when you tend to blow it, when you're stressed and super hungry and you've got fatigue and all the rest of it. What about what happens at work? What about at play? What about for men and women? That's the part I loved. Michael, hats off to you for really doing the gender specific play on this one, because that's so important. Yeah, we're a little different, just saying. And the final section was the whole issue of at risk. Ah, so many of us are freaking out about everything from our heart to cancer risk to what's going on with our bones, let alone our mind, diabetes, lungs, inflammation, hormonal issues, and a whole wealth of other problems. Michael, well done on covering all of this so comprehensively in your book. Again, everyone out there, the name of the book by Dr. Michael Roizen is What to Eat When, A Strategic Plan to Improve Your Health and Life Through Food. And the website is WenWei. Michael, thank you so much for being on our podcast.
Thank you for bringing us her in general and us in specific. Thank you. And thank your listeners, too.
Oh, you're the best, Michael. Keep up the incredible work. We need you. And everyone out there, run on over to iTunes right now and rate and review the show, because this has just been a wealth of knowledge thrown your way. Come on, girlfriends, read it up and write a review. Want to hear from you. Why? Because I'm Dr. Pam Peake, host of the Her Podcast, and I want to hear from you. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peake or Twitter at Pam Peake MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. And thanks for listening today. Stay well.